What does it mean to be a leader in cancer care? At Davis Hospital Cancer Center, we know. It means a team of experts providing exceptional care using advanced technology and treatment plans designed specifically for each of our patients. And our nurse patient navigators are here to make your experience convenient and comfortable. To find out how our expert team could help you, contact us at davishospital.org. The Cancer Center at Davis Hospital and Medical Center, a Steward family hospital in partnership with physician owners.
Start the new year right during the Xfinity Hello 2021 sales event. For a limited time, get Xfinity Internet and mobile together for only $35 a month for 12 months with a one-year agreement, and mobile with our 1 gig wireless data option. Plus, get $250 back. This sale ends soon, so visit Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit an Xfinity store today. Internet offer requires paperless billing and autopay. Ends 1/11/21. Restrictions apply. New performance starter plus internet customers only. Equipment taxes, regulatory recovery, and other fees extra and subject to change. After term, regular rates apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture Podcast. I am your host, Isaac Weishaupt from IlluminatiWatcher.com. I'm very excited to share a recent conversation I had with rockers Brian Steele Medina and Aaron Nordstrom from Gemini Syndrome. What's curious here is that Brian is a 32nd degree Freemason, and Aaron is incredibly educated in many of the concepts that are within the realm of conspiracy theory, such as ancient cultures and occult principles. I have to preface this show with a bit of a personal surprise I received when we started getting into the topics, and that is, wow, do these guys know a lot about the ideas we've been exploring on IlluminatiWatcher.com, and we get into a challenging argument on religion, Jesus, God, Freemasonry, compassion for Lucifer, which is a very controversial concept we definitely did not budget enough time for, and much more. Now, Gemini Syndrome is a heavy metal band with a huge following, and they are not bashful about the concepts of the occult, as you'll hear when we get into the interview. We go into ideas of reality, symbolism, comparative ancient religions and cultures, the future connectedness of the New World Order, plans for the third impending album to complete their trilogy, and so much more. This conversation left me with more questions about the fundamental nature of reality and religion than most episodes, and I look forward to talking with Aaron and Brian a bit more about this kind of stuff in the future. As a bonus, I've also got some images of the band uploaded on IlluminatiWatcher.com, in which you'll see Brian Steele Medina in his Freemason garb. Now, I know my lovely audience for this show, and I already know that this could be the most controversial interview I've done yet. I'm excited to read the responses on the, you could leave a comment on IlluminatiWatcher.com for this post, or I will be posting this on YouTube, and I'm curious to hear what people think about these kind of ideas we get into. I'll also post where you can follow Gemini Syndrome on their Facebook and Twitter on the Illuminati Watcher article. They've also got a YouTube channel, obviously, for their music videos that you can check out as well. Now, before we get into it, I also want to give an update on my magnum opus book, The Dark Path. I've been talking about it for months. I've recently been struggling to try to get the cover art through it passed. Now, I am finalizing the audiobook. I've narrated the entire book. It will be on audible.com. It is in the final quality stages over at Audible, and they'll be publishing it, I'm hoping, by mid-September 2017. But anyways, if you wanted to read this book, I've been talking about it for months, you can get the PDF ebook readable on pretty much anything on my Gumroad store. If you type in my Gumroad store name of Isaac W. into your search engine, you should find it. Or you can go to my website to this article for the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture podcast for Gemini Syndrome, and you can find the link to this exclusive PDF that you can read the whole thing. If you want it in another form, which I get, I'm a paperback guy, I don't like reading on the ebooks, the book will be available very soon. It'll be available on Amazon, CreateSpace, iTunes, and like I said, I've got the author-narrated Audible audiobooks coming real soon. And I'll also be selling signed paperbacks through my Gumroad store as well. But, you know, sign up for my email newsletter on IlluminatiWatcher.com and you'll get notifications for all of this stuff. I haven't sent out the big kind of grand release email or post about this yet because I want to get all the different avenues in place before I start offering it up. But if you can't wait, if you want it now, you can go to my Gumroad store, Isaac W., look for The Dark Path. This book is my greatest understanding of how entertainment fits into the big occult scheme to usher in an age of Luciferianism where man can become God. I use familiar examples from music, film, and television to explain how symbolism and predictive programming work, followed up by the secret esoteric version of world history and their planned future. And as promised from my email that I sent out, the survey where you voted on what you wanted me to write about, I go into the alien deception and how they'll be evolving us into this lie. Now, this is my most personal book. I share a few details of my personal life and experiences on this Illuminati Watcher journey that actually took me to the front door of the Faustian bargain, believe it or not. Anyways, if you want to keep this Illuminati Watcher project alive and show support, please pick a copy up. As you know, I've talked about this in the past and you've heard it from others, Google is basically demonetizing anything that they claim as quote-unquote subversive. So everything I do used to be paid for by ads from Google, and that's pretty much dried up, and now books is the main source of revenue to pay for the operations, like the email newsletter, web hosting. I also have to spend time away from my day job. I have to take time off work to do things such as this podcast, and, you know, all the articles I write on IlluminatiWatcher.com. But, you know, I do this because I enjoy it and I like sharing the info, so I appreciate it a ton. You can pick up the book on Gumroad right now, or you can wait, and by mid-September, you can get it everywhere else. Now, let's get into the show. I know you're going to enjoy this one. It's got some very interesting topics. I've got Brian Steele Medina and Aaron Nordstrom from Gemini Syndrome on the line. How you guys doing?
Good. Very well.
Well,
happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you guys on because your band, Gemini Syndrome, has a lot of curiosities I want to get into. But first, I'd like to explain to the audience briefly what I'm talking about, and then, you know, I'll allow you guys to clarify these ideas a bit. What's interesting to me is that you don't seem to be, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you don't seem to be using some of this sort of occult symbolism or sort of phrases as a gimmick. Instead, you guys seem to have a legitimate background practicing some of these ideas. Like, for example, Brian, is it true that I read that you're a 32nd degree Freemason in the Scottish Rite? Is that correct?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. What got you interested in that?
From a young age, I had known that both my grandfathers were Freemasons, and when I was younger, like around 8 years old, I knew that my uncle was a Freemason. So it was just something that I kind of had in the back of my mind kicking around. And as I, you know, grew up and, you know, throughout my teens and my early 20s, it was something that I, you know, learned more about as, you know, starting off with just, you know, the more just like the perceptions of it. And then I started researching a little bit. And then at a certain point in my life, when I turned 30, all of a sudden, a bunch of, you know, friends kind of came out, kind of popped into my life that were all Freemasons. And, you know, throughout that, I would ask them questions and, you know, went to my first, you know, couple of, you know, dinners and just, you know, just, I pursued it. You know, I became friends with a lot of guys at the lodge and stuck with it. And it's, you know, turned out to be one of the most valuable things in my life.
So because in this sort of realm of conspiracy theory, the Freemasons get picked on a lot. Is there anything that you hear from the circles of conspiracy theorists that you kind of agree with? You know, there's obviously a lot of like a wide discrepancy of what the Freemasons may or may not believe in. And I'm sure you can't share certain things because it's sort of like, you know, secret society, obviously. But, you know, there seems to be this idea that the Freemasons control the world because a lot of the presidents were high ranking Freemasons. Is there any sort of things that you hear that may be way off track that you'd like to clarify?
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's a big topic because, I mean, I think that there's, when it comes to conspiracy theories, that's my bread and butter ever since I was young. I've dived into a lot of that stuff, a lot, deep, deep, deep down the rabbit hole. And what I found is I feel that the people that kind of dabble in conspiracy theory and they just kind of don't really put that much research or effort into it, those are the people that kind of tend to think the Freemasons are in control, because the minute you just dive even just a little deep, they would have way more interesting answers than Freemasons. We'd be talking more about like the actual Bavarian Illuminati or like legitimate, like, you know, like the Muslim groups that like existed like way before the Illuminati did. And then we would even be talking about more like, you know, I mean, if they just kind of rounded it out to like Freemasons and didn't bring up Skull and Bones and Bohemian Grove and like more of the ones that I find personally more interesting, I would find that kind of lazy.
Yeah, I know what you mean. When I started out, I was in that same sort of school of thought. There are some curiosities, and you know, like you said, that's probably an entire show in and of itself. Now, Aaron, you've also got an interesting background as well. I read you were in college by the age of 14, and you majored in psychology, philosophy, and music. While I can't say that I share those same credentials, I've actually taken a couple courses on philosophy in college, and I've got some experience going to a therapist that helps me sort my crazy brain out. But to me, it seems that these fields of study, psychology, philosophy, and music, these are all topics that come up often in my research and when you research the realm of occultism. Would you agree with that sort of idea?
Yeah, absolutely. Not to mention that, like, I also studied world religion. That was a huge part of my education as a kid, was learning, you know, what similarity of what Christianity shared to Judaism, shared to Islam, shared to Zoroastrianism, shared to Taoism, to Confucianism. And if you start looking at all of these different, you know, cultures from all across the world, they share these core fundamental beliefs. And at the base of it, like the morals are the same. Mm-hmm. You know, I get into arguments with my Kung Fu teacher because he's a very devout Catholic. And when I say that the name of God can be said in many different ways, he gets very upset with me. He's not happy about it. And that's just where we tend to disagree, I guess.
Yeah,
but
that's
as you're researching all these things and you see, like, from Buddhism, from the East, is very much tied into Christianity and Judaism and Kabbalah from the West. You know, all of these sacred doctrines kind of fall in the same vein, and they all teach the same kind of thing, but they call it by different names. And that always takes me back to, like, divide and conquer as far as cultures go.
Hmm. You mean,
does that make sense?
Yeah. So are you saying, like, maybe there's a core sort of belief system that everyone is pointed towards, but they divide
absolutely.
Us up. Okay.
And culturally over time, over thousands of years, those got divvied up.
Huh.
You know, you have Lao Tzu in China, and you have Buddha in India, and you have Jesus of Nazareth in Jerusalem, and you have Abraham and Solomon, and you have all these different prophets, and they're all preaching the same thing. They're all talking about the same unity of the soul to the greater consciousness, right? But they call it by different names. And that's what creates these wars, and that's what creates this dissension between cultures.
And I'd like to point out the people that divided up and segregated are never those people that initiated it. It wasn't Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad or Zarathustra who divided it up. Those people were all trying to combine it and bring it together. It's always
correct.
It's always 300 to 800 years later that some people in power want to use that person as a mascot, you know, and raise their flag, but actually use it for, you know, not good purposes. But much as you can see today with, you know, the, like, a Nazi waving an American flag, you know, or claiming that they're Christian while, you know, completely ignoring the foundation on which both those institutions were made to promote something that goes completely against it. You know, those are the same things that made.
I'm sorry, my phone just said that my call ended, and that kind of confused me. But I still hear you.
No, that's fine. What I find interesting about that is that in certain religions, in almost all religions, there's a clause in the belief system that if you deny your faith, then you somehow going against your God, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a Christian in a Muslim country and you deny your Christianity, then you're somehow forfeiting your faith. However, if you're a Christian in a Muslim country where they're trying to cut your head off, it might be in your best interest to lie to save your life, right? Mm. To propagate the faith that you believe in. But even more so than that, all of those faiths are the same thing. And now, I think that's where people fail to see the connection between Islam, Judaism, Christianity, especially those three.
Yeah.
And people just want to fight about it.
Well, when I was researching some of the left-hand path ideas, It seems like they're, when you look at some of these, I don't know if it's like ritual magicians necessarily, but some of the people they dislike.
Crowley and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they dislike organized religion, Christianity in particular, because it requires the practitioner to go through a, like a priest to make contact with the divine or, this idea that God is like a global consciousness. And yeah, I can see how, going to the point earlier made about how the original teachers like Jesus Christ per se, they didn't necessarily, like I've read that an idea is that Jesus came to spiritualize the material world, and then people believe the church came in and kind of fought that and pushed a sort of material realm. More so, it's all interesting stuff. But earlier you talked about the global.
Now we're getting into Gnosticism and the gnosis of God, which is heresy by the church, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
That's always baffled me because, like you said, you have to go through a priest. You have to go through someone else. The definition of God, mathematically even, is that God is everything. If God is the infinite all plus one, it's the one thing we can't comprehend. So why would I need a person to go through, especially a fallible human, to go through to reach God, to experience that divine nature, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that you shouldn't pray or or meditate or do things like that. I think those things are very beneficial for our simple human brains. But the minute that you say that someone else has to be my conduit to God, I have to disagree.
Now, an idea, just to play devil's advocate, no pun intended, but like Crowley and them, Crowley and them seem to think that, like when you explore these sort of, you know, realms of contacting entities and the divine, that there was a certain inherent danger involved. And sometimes I can't help but think, like, maybe this sort of ancient knowledge is you know, compensated for by churches, for example, to try to prevent people from kind of causing harm upon themselves.
Surely. And that's a very, that's the positive spin on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody like Crowley, just based on my research, like I'm looking at my copy of The Golden Dawn right now. And, Crowley went in a very strange direction, and he took it to a very evil, dark place. He was trying to get, you know, basically magic powers or whatever. The Book of the Golden Dawn is a scary book if you read it. However, I think taking it back to just the connection, just the gnosis with God is more important. I think Crowley was, in the Luciferian sense, trying to become God, which is, of course, the story of Lucifer falling from heaven. I want to be equal to God, and basically be God. But to be a part of it is a different thing. I truly believe that all of us here on this planet, everybody who's alive ever, is just a part of this massive play, and we interact with each other, and we, oh, that delay is really killing me. That's really fun. like to interact with our friends and our family and try to make it better and try to make it good. I think Crowley was taking it to a very dark place where he was trying to do, like, I remember, one of the passages in The Golden Dawn is about a spell of invisibility. Like, we're talking about, like, vampire shit there, you know? It's, like, way dark, man. Like, I don't need that.
I look at a lot of that stuff like, you know, and Aaron, you brought up family, which is really important because we all have family and we all have the people that you know, go to the light, some people go to the dark. Sometimes it's on a very deep, dark level. Sometimes it's not to be taken so serious, you know? It's like if you had a brother and a sister and one decided to go direct comedy films and another one went off to direct horror films. You know, I would have never call Rob Zombie more of an evil guy than Adam Sandler, because they each kind of gravitate towards two different directions when they direct films. I think a lot of the people tend to take certain things way too seriously, and I think Aleister Crowley was probably one of those people that took himself way too seriously. and Anton LaVey probably is, to the opposite of that, someone who didn't take himself that seriously. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where even though other people do. And I think there's an important lesson in that, because I had this conversation with a guy who's a very devout Christian, and it was funny how quickly he came to certain phrases where he was saying something to the effect of, well, that's just, you know, that's Satan trying to loop you in, or that's like, you know, that's the devil's trick or whatever. And I understand that from a philosophical level. But also, if we're going to talk about religion and God and Jesus and Lucifer in a philosophical light, then I brought this to his attention. I'm like, you know, if God is a father And by Christian doctrine, Jesus and Lucifer and Michael and Adam, they're all brothers. And Lucifer is the older brother. You know, he's the one that, you know, a little more ambitious, you know, maybe a little more, maybe, I'm not going to say more talented, but maybe he's just the one that kind of like took to things a little better, picked his thing, you know, where you know, if you look at it, you know, Jesus manifested his youth in by being a carpenter, you know, a very understated yet proud career, you know, where Lucifer would have obviously been someone who is more inclined to be maybe a politician or a king, someone of stature, you know. And we all know people like that in our life, so you know. And but you take yourself out of take a step back and look at it from the relationship of a father and his two sons, you know, just like the patriarchal son. It's a very, very similar analogy where you have one son that kind of essentially steps up to his dad, and his dad kind of lays the smack down on him and puts him in a corner, proverbially. And then he gives the keys to the younger son. He says, hey man, you're not disobeying me. You're not trying to question me. I'm going to give it to you, you know? Now that being said, if we put any of ourselves in that situation, even just on a hypothetical level where we have two sons, even if my son killed someone and was in jail and had to serve his time, even if he did some thing that was against society, like, you know, I think most of us would still love our son, love our kid, love our brother, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us have relatives that have done things like that, and you know, that might be in jail, or maybe it like died, or in some scenario, and you can imagine how that would feel.
Poor choices.
Yeah, and so I think the main part about a father, you know, is having that fatherly love, or a mother having that motherly love that would forgive and love their son, and it's important to remember that when we're thinking about anyone, you know, that's someone's father, that's someone's brother, that's someone's mother, you know, that's someone's daughter. You know, and if a man, if a human, if an evolved, you know, monkey hybrid, could somehow develop the compassion and the empathy to forgive, other men, other humans for performing the worst things ever, then wouldn't God be the epitome, you know, the thing we're all striving and to be on that level, wouldn't he have the ultimate forgiveness, the ultimate compassion, to forgive us humans, us souls, us, you know, we're like the monkeys, right? Like, but then Jesus and Lucifer, those who are sin, you think he's going to forgive us and take us back to heaven and forever and for all infinity, for all eternity, cast away his son? You know what I mean? Like we're operating in this timeline of this finite timeline of existence where we're born and we die. And we try to understand the concept of infinity. We try to understand the concept of eternity. And we can only ever experience it in a thought, you know, or on a DM tree trip, one of the two. But if we go further into thinking about that in the analogy, or not the analogy, but I guess the story of God and his two sons, you know, do we really think that it's God's plan to punish and banish and leave Lucifer, his son, forever there? Or maybe the point of it is that Lucifer will eventually come to an understanding, and maybe him and God will work it out.
And go home.
Yeah. And so understanding that from a compassionate, loving family standpoint, you know, then what are we really doing by placing these negative attributes, or maybe blame, or maybe, you know, demonizing Lucifer, and they said, oh, well, all these things happen because of Lucifer. The thing about that that kind of jumps out at me when you think about it like that is, well, that's just temporary. That's a temporary state of mind. That's like a fit of rage or a fit of anger. That's like losing your temper and hitting someone in the face or like doing or saying something really hurtful and then later regretting it, you know, because any time we step out of those, that line of being present and calm and in a place of love and serenity in our heart, then that action will suffer its own consequence. You know, that's how we learn from those things, and it's a natural cause and effect. And so when we do something wrong, we feel wrong. And that's just the law of nature. That's Kabbalah right there, you know? Yeah. So if we take all the personalities out of it and we stop, you know, like calling God vengeful or forgiving, or if we stop, you know, calling Lucifer prideful or dissenting, you know what I mean? Like, or Jesus loyal and humble, then we just realize that these are all a metaphor for the pillars of the Kabbalah. You have the top seraph, and everything filters down, everything splits into two and becomes the experience of the human condition, you know, from us all the way up and vice versa. And I think that those kind of things, when you like dig into what Jesus actually was talking about, and when you dig into what Muhammad was actually talking about, and if you dig into what Buddha was actually talking about, and forget a little bit more about what all of their prophets and followers and kinfolk were talking about, you'll realize that that's what they were talking about. Hmm. And none of them ever were striving to be anything other than the messengers of all of us to become Gnostic and have that personal connection with our higher power, with God, you know?
Hmm. That's actually incredibly insightful because, you know, on my sort of path to understanding what's what, I started out reading into the conspiracies, and although I am a Christian, I seem to dislike the idea that all these conspiracy theories were related around some kind of like right-wing Christian agenda. And I tried to separate the two, but it seems to me that like the belief in a God or grand creator or whatever have you, that does seem to be one of the key components to understanding, you know, what's going on and why people believe in the Illuminati and all this stuff. And it was interesting because, I went to a therapist, and I went through a process that he described to me as individuation, which turns out is sort of like an alchemical transformation. So ironically, this stuff I've been reading about, it is something that helped me greatly. One of the conclusions I've come to is that it seems if there's any kind of, I don't know if I want to say evil, but if there's any kind of agenda of keeping us from finding our purpose here on Earth, it's to separate each other. And just like you said, like all you've really got is sort of like family and relationships. So with the implementation of technology, transhumanism, social media, for example, like these are all really good tools used to separate us and keep us from having legitimate relationships, like one-on-one with other human beings. And, you know, instead people want to like live their life out online through these sort of like, you know, Instagram fake personalities, I guess you'd call it. But to take a step back, the your first album, Lux, I read an interview where Aaron compared the song Basement with the fall of Lucifer. And I also noticed there's a track called Morning Star that references...
That was actually the song is Morning Star. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I got those confused there.
Basement was about me being an albino and growing up, but Morning Star was truly a diatribe about the fall of Lucifer from heaven, yearning to be back with God.
Okay, so that kind of ties into the ideas, kind of like what you were talking about of
absolutely. Like, I've had this argument with some people that I'm very close to. With Lucifer, if he's the light bringer, he's the sun bearer. He rises in the east. We have all these symbolism references, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, on a long enough timeline, if God is connected to everything and Lucifer fell off, wanted more than he was deserved, I guess, but wants to come back to heaven, eventually, if we have a God of love, then God would accept him back in, assuming he repents or at least recognizes the fact that everything is equal. If God, as Thomas Aquinas defined it, God is that one thing that is beyond the infinite that we can't understand. So all these stories of Lucifer and the fall of the angel, the most loved of all the angels, and he goes and becomes evil. Eventually, we all want to go back to that same place. We all want to go back to that place of love. Everybody wants that.
Mm-hmm.
I assume, anyway. Maybe people want to stay in a place of hate. And if that be the case, then so be it. That's your choice. But I think at the deepest level, we all want to be one.
Yeah, that's interesting too. When I talk to my priest about some of these ideas, because, you know, I have a hard time subscribing to the entire, dogma of Christianity. And I'll ask some of the, harder questions. And it's interesting because my priest will oftentimes say, like, I'm not God. How do I know? Like, God is kind of an infinite all-knowing. We have no idea what God thinks. I agree with you.
Omniscient, omnipresent.
Yeah, I agree. Yep, I agree with that.
And it's more, to go back to Thomas Aquinas, he's my favorite of the Catholic writers. Like, he actually supposedly experienced the ecstasy where he raised off the ground and he was engulfed in light, where he finally found this connection with God, right? This is like supernatural shit we're talking about. But the point was that if Lucifer fell and he was separated from God and all he wanted to do was be part of God, I mean, that's a metaphor. That's a parable for all of us. We're all humans. We're all here. You know, we have to pay bills. We have to make house, like fixtures and stuff. We have to fix stuff that breaks,
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, there's a bigger thing happening. And we're part of some kind of spiritual thing. And we're all part of God. And we all want to go there, even if we deny it. Even the Satanists. Those are my favorites. The guys that are Satanists. Like, I'm a Satanist. Okay, sure you are. Sure you are. So, what do you really believe in? And then you walk down the line of... Brian, correct me if I'm wrong. What is it, the 9 contexts of Satanism?
Yeah, those 9 supposed commandments.
Yeah.
Of, like, well, once again, like, written by who? Written by Anton LaVey in the 30s. Like, I don't think, you can't take any of that shit any more seriously than...
It was probably way high on weed.
Yeah, like, him and Ron Hubbard were in a contest to start their own religion, I mean...
Yeah, man. You could talk about fucking, pardon my French, could talk about L. Ron Hubbard and Scientology and talk about that, and that'll be another religion. But it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
It's all bullshit. At the end of the day, I think people want to connect with other people. That's our purpose to be here. Love each other. That's it.
Yeah, it's curious, your second album, released in 2016, is called Memento Mori, and that's an infamous message used by Christians, Freemasons, to make the practitioner reflect on the mortality and you know, short term of life, quite possibly so that we can focus on what's important, and, you know, like you said, relationships.
Take note.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you about that album because the artwork on it has a lot of symbols. Is there a hidden message to be found on the artwork for that?
I don't know if there's a hidden message. In fact, I would argue that the message is right in front of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I believe in the power of symbolism and his ability to transcend language, transcend time, and connect more deeply with your subconscious, because, you know, so many things get lost in language. A lot of the stuff that we're talking about, like 99% of all the stuff we're talking about, is stuff that was written in English, you know, 500 years ago, and us, these English-speaking men from America, are discussing philosophy and ideas that were translated from Greek and Latin and Hebrew, that were from texts that were written
even
hundreds of years ago. But even then, like, all these spiritual, all of these concepts and principles are so ancient that, I mean, we can't, these are concepts and principles that predate language, that predate writing, that predate, you know, when we could even smack two rocks or twigs together to make a fire. Like, these are eternal spiritual principles and concepts.
You go back to the primordial tradition.
Yes, exactly. And so, when we, some of the most powerful and impactful messages that we have from the past are written in hieroglyph, whether we're talking about the
Aztec or Egyptian hieroglyphics.
These are ancient systems of writing and understanding, and we can lose the meaning of something from texting. And that's when we do things like verbatim, like right out of our brain into the mouth of someone else. When you start playing the game of telephone with language and centuries of time difference of the the meaning of words. I mean, for us to, the most thorough religious scholars that learn Hebrew and understand the intricacies of the Hebrew language and translate that into the Bible or whatever, you know, there's a lot of subtext in there that we're missing. And if you ever get one of the books that have side by side the English and the Hebrew, and then on the notes on the bottom, okay, well, that says this, but here's also the other five alternate meanings. And until you read all of these, you don't get the full understanding of everything. And also, by the way, that the number one, which also represents God, which also represents, you know, the sun, you know what I mean? Which also, you know, and then you get into the other stuff.
Ron.
Yeah. So, you know, I like to bring it all back to that. I mean, we basically started over 10,000 years ago. You know, with the melting of the ice caps and everything kind of, we whatever humanity was before then, we had a big reboot. Whether or not you want to believe in Atlantis or the great civilizations that really made the pyramids and all that stuff, It's like we had a big reboot 10,000 years ago, and we reached the point where, you know, it took, 8,000, 9,000 years for us to get to the place where the story of Moses comes about, and you know, and then another couple thousand years before that, we're talking about, yeah, then we're talking about Noah, and then we're talking about Adam and Eve. And, you know, all of that fits within that timeline. And it came to fruition where we start, you know, counting forward instead of backward, you know, around the time of Jesus. You know, and it spawns all these different stories and these different religions and these different cultures. And what's really, really cool is we're reaching this point. You know, it's kind of funny to me how, like, what's his name? I'm forgetting his name right now. The guy that talks about the singularity.
Ray Kurzweil?
Kurzweil. It's funny how, like, everything started, you know, from a small group of people that didn't have the ability to necessarily travel or get to know the cultures or whatever, and whether there were multiple pockets of them all over the world, you know, and then we spread out, and we become very divided to the point where you have Chinese speaking, you know, Chinese, you have Russians speaking Russian, you have Native American, Indigenous Natives. I mean, we're spread out all over the world. And then over the past 20 years, through the technology of the internet and satellites, we are suddenly all very, very connected. And the inevitable outcome from that over the next couple hundred years, let alone the next couple thousand years, if we don't blow ourselves up, you know, we'll bring all of us back together in a way that we've, you know, through recorded history that we've never achieved before. So it'll be real interesting to see where that goes, you know, because so much of our society, like Aaron was talking about, is based on dividing us and keeping us separate. So much, in fact, that it's demonized to the point in the Bible where, like, the New World Order and 666, and any attempt to divide borders, I'm sorry, to tear down borders and to create a unified earth is, like, looked at with, like, somehow with the same intensity as, like, you know, murderous nuclear war. Like, I mean, they demonize, you know, the New World Order, like, keeping everyone together and eliminating borders and having everyone just be one community. Like, they look at that like it's the most evil thing in the world. And that's always been so curious to me ever since I was so young. It's like, why is it so wrong? Like, what happens if we, you know, combine, you know, New Mexico and Arizona? You know what I mean? Like, what's going to be so bad about that? And then what happens when we, you know, when we are the United States? And if we were the birds of Canada? You know what I mean? I get, from a political and economic standpoint, I know that those are all factors now, but, like, when the Bible was written and translated, it's interesting. It's like they built in a panic button to, like, keep us divided in all these systems.
Yeah, I agree with you in the sense that, like, I don't fall in line with the camp of the right wing Alex Jones types, and I've always struggled with.
Oh, like, I love Alex Jones. Come on, now.
I don't.
We can all love Alex Jones. Love everything. He's
like a brother. That's right.
I believe all of it.
Yeah. You're in the frogs, gay.
The gay frogs, right?
And the funny thing about it is that's actually real. Like, things that we make. That he gets pointed and made fun of for it. Actually, like, you can read the article. That really happened. Yeah.
It is. You're absolutely right. And you know, Alex Jones is more of a fear monger than I prefer. But you're right. Sometimes the guy does speak the truth. But anyways, last question.
And sometimes he's a fucking maniac. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Yeah, he is.
No doubt.
So the last,
you're running a podcast. You should watch the Joe Rogan, Alex Jones podcast.
Oh yeah, I did.
3 hours of entertainment.
Yeah, that one was good. Yeah, he.
You want the big enchilada instead of a stone? That's great.
Yeah, that was a good one for sure. The last question I have for you guys: what are the plans for the next album? Or is that top secret info?
It, and we're going to record it, and it's going to be awesome.
I read something about a trilogy idea. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. The first will be the conclusion of the trilogy. The Lux, you know, meaning life, birth, Memento Mori, you know.
Brian, you have to help me here. There's the three cross.
The three cross.
That Tim talks about, the three level cross. So this will be the last tree branch on the cross.
Hmm. Yeah.
It'll be death and resurrection and not like dying in the sense of like, oh, I'm dead now, but transformation.
Okay.
Which is literally like, oh, I'm dead now. And then, and then that.
You meant I can't have that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hey, you guys are incredibly knowledgeable on these topics. I'd love to pick your brains a bit longer, but we're out of time. Could you please let the audience know where they can connect with you, find your albums, and, you know, the social media handles and whatnot?
I mean, you go to GeminiSyndrome.com. You type that in Google, you'll find the YouTube videos, you will find the merch, you will find the Twitter and the Instagrams and the Facebooks and the MySpace and the Tinders and whatever there is out there. We got all of it.
Right. And I'll post links to everything on IlluminatiWatcher.com for this episode.
Can we do more interviews, man? I'd love to get on the phone with you again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Has definitely 100% been the raddest interview we've ever done.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, you guys have been great, man.
We never get to talk. They're like, so tell us about that one time you got a flat tire in Lincoln, Nebraska. It's like, oh, rad.
Yeah, man.
I'll tell you what, Isaac. I'm starting up a podcast, like radio show. I don't know what the fuck to call it, but I'm going to do it at my house in Vegas. If you're ever here, like, come over and have a conversation with me.
Hell yeah, dude. Most definitely. I live up in Utah, so I can get down there.
That's easy.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I'd love to have you guys back on. I feel like there's a lot I could actually learn from you guys. I'm still trying to traverse this world of the occult. It sounds like you guys have spent a lot of time researching it, so... I do want to thank you for coming on my show, and we will definitely be back in touch.
Our pleasure, man. All right.
Thanks a lot.
All right. That was the show. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it brought some new light into how some people view the realm of the occult or Freemasonry even. We talked a little bit about the ideas behind Lucifer and... You know, they bring up some good points. I'm not saying I'm jumping on the left-hand path, but it is a curious idea to think that God would want us to forgive Lucifer. So why are we labeling him as this sort of, you know, demonic antichrist? I'm sure my priest would have other advice for me on how to view that. But yeah, it was a very interesting topic. I'm definitely talking to these guys again. We need to get further into it. We did not have enough time. But for now, if you want to go to IlluminatiWatcher.com for this article, you can find the links for the band. Check out their YouTube. They've got lots of videos on there. You can check out I believe they are on tour still in 2017, or they just wrapped it up. You can check out their Twitter and Facebook pages for more. And again, if you want to show support for this podcast, please leave reviews on iTunes and or Stitcher. If you want to show a lot of support for the Illuminati Watcher project in whole, go buy The Dark Path by Isaac Weishaupt. Thanks again for listening.
What does it mean to be a leader in cancer care? At Davis Hospital Cancer Center, we know. It means a team of experts providing exceptional care using advanced technology and treatment plans designed specifically for each of our patients. And our nurse patient navigators are here to make your experience convenient and comfortable. To find out how our expert team could help you, contact us at davishospital.org. The Cancer Center at Davis Hospital and Medical Center, a Steward family hospital in partnership with physician owners. What does it mean to be a leader in cancer care? At Davis Hospital Cancer Center, we know. It means a team of experts providing exceptional care using advanced technology and treatment plans designed specifically for each of our patients. And our nurse patient navigators are here to make your experience convenient and comfortable. To find out how our expert team could help you, contact us at davishospital.org. The Cancer Center at Davis Hospital and Medical Center, a Steward family hospital in partnership with physician owners.